Hi there, beautiful people. Welcome to another episode of the Fountaka Junction Real Talk. And I hope you haven't missed us. We've been on a very short hiatus, but we're back with the Independence Day special. And I've got with me in the studio today the one and only Big Resh.
Yeah,
Big Resh with the big chest.
I don't even know if we should call it Independence because it feels like we are still under some very serious
under siege. Yeah. Under economic economic and political siege.
Yeah, I mean, can't have you seen that? I mean, it doesn't look like a lot of people are celebrating this independence.
Yeah,
the only person that is giving speech up and down now, Tinubu. He's the only one giving speech up and down.
Only the guys in government have something to celebrate this.
I mean,
independence.
So far so good, like, you know, I mean, getting on the street, I mean, I've not really seen anybody celebrating anything at all.
Yeah.
It was my friend I was talking to yesterday. I mean, she lives in the UK. She's living in the UK. She's Ugandan. And she was like, ah, man, you guys are celebrating independence. That a whole lot of Nigerians are just making noise in the UK. Da, 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 da. I was like, those ones are homesick. Like, you know, come home, come to Nigeria, you see. If we are celebrating independence or not, really. I mean, it's ridiculous. We are supposed to 63 now.
Yeah.
I mean, and they say full at 40. We are 63.
I mean, yeah.
So what are we going to call ourselves?
Right? So let's even kind of dimension it right. 63 years since independence. Nigeria gained independence in 1960. We've had democratic rule for a little over, maybe close to 30 years or 25 years, odd years, right?
That's going on 25 years.
Yeah.
I mean, stable
democracy. Yeah, stable democracy since 1999, right?
Yeah, thereabouts. 1999, yeah.
25 years. What can we say we've done right as a country? What can we say we've done wrong? I know that some lovers of Nigeria will say, listen, you guys were too quick to call out the bad things and project the bad things and ignore the things that have gone right. You know, this is a time for us to reflect and give ourselves a pat on the back for some of the things we've done right, and then also shape up to, you know, push for, you know, corrections for things that we've done wrong. In your view, can you say, let's leave all the hardship aside, can you say there are one or two things that you can point out and say as a country We can be proud of ourselves that we've come this far?
I think if we're talking about what we have done right, I'll look at it from individual level. Nigeria as a unit, Nigeria as a country, we haven't done nothing right. You know, we have done close to zero right. You know, by nothing, I'm not saying there are no pockets here and there, you know, and all, but most of the infrastructure that we have up until today, the infrastructure that has been built from the colonial guys, as for me, of which me, I live in Lagos, so I know what Lagos is about, really, you know. So for me, I wouldn't say we have really done anything out of the ordinary. To be sincere with you, I don't think we have done. But when we look at it individually,
what do you mean by individually?
Maybe
pockets of people, you know, individuals.
Chinua Achebe, for instance, Wole Soyinka, you know. I mean,
please stop mentioning Wole Soyinka.
No, we're going to get to that.
Just Akin,
the Dream, Olajuwon, you know, my favorite Nigerian sporting exports, you know, out of Nigeria. I mean, arguably out of Africa, because I mean net worth, Akin is around $300 million.
Is he still active?
Yeah, I mean, he's not a personal coach, you know.
Oh, okay.
I mean, Giannis Antetokounmpo, you know, like a week ago, you know, was with him. I mean, training, you know, just before training camp, you know.
Nice.
I mean, this guy, what's his name now? Retired basketball guy one bum like that was calling out Akim that Akim was charging $50,000, you know, for maybe like two sessions, you know, basketball training, that, and I'm like, you know what Akim is? They called him the Dream Shake, you know. I mean, he was the guy, you know. I mean, five slice lama jama, you know, from the Houston, you know, alumni, you know, in their university days and all. Akim Olajuwon is, you know, he's one of the best, the biggest, you know, I mean, stars of the NBA and all, 50 greatest, what's it called, before they now, what's it called, upgraded it to the 75 greatest basketball players ever, you know, in the history of basketball. So what is that guy saying? You know, I've even forgotten his name, though I know his name very well. He was the one that took Gunn to the locker room when he was in Washington Wizards. He's the one that took Gunn to the locker room, you know. Gilbert Arenas, you know, that's his name and all. Yeah, so I mean, so we can talk about that. We can talk about them JJ Okocha, we can talk about them Kano, we can talk about them Stephen Keshi, you know, our Super Falcons, you know. I mean, we have it, and then the music, what's it called? In the music staple, we can talk about all of them. Two-Face, you know,
Burna Boy,
Kings on the Day, David Whiskey, all the rest of them, you know, yeah. Chioma, the gospel artist, the most famous gospel artist ever in Nigeria.
Who's that?
Sinach, you know, I know. So we can actually look at us and say we make Africa proud, you know, as Nigerians. You know, there is nowhere we go. You know, we are the life of the party. You know, I mean, when it comes to education, Nigeria is leading in the US, you know. I mean, the most educated, you know, immigrants, you know, out of, you know, Africa, you know, and all. It's Nigerians, you know, that are leading there, leading different sectors there and all. This guy, what's his name? He's the chief of medical, you know, the medical arm of, I mean, Florida. He's the one that decides if Florida should lock down and Florida shouldn't lock down. He's a Nigerian. He's a Yoruba Nigerian, for instance.
Yeah.
So we know that. We know our records when it comes to individual accolades and individual achievements.
Yeah.
But when it comes to us functioning as a nation, we've had some of the worst set of leaders, some of the most, you know, when it comes to their record, some of the most, I mean, I don't know, really, you know. So for me, I can't really give kudos to us on, what's it called, as Nigerians, you know. But yeah, individually, we have countless, you know, we can't even count it. I mean, we have a lot of plethora of people, you know, that are doing very, very well, as Nigerians. Yes, and that's a good thing, really, you know. But if we have this much educated and this much, you know, talents, you know, and we don't know how to harness it, we don't know how to use it, you know, to the best of our, you know, our ability, then that means we have failed ourselves, really, you know. So
so and I think you're pretty spot on. Nigerians as individuals, they've done their best to put the country on the global map. Pockets of Nigerians across the world, you know, flying the flag high. However, when we bring it back home, Nigeria as a unit, we haven't quite reached the expectations that you would think a country that is blessed and endowed with the resources that we have, both human and mineral. We just don't seem to be able to get our acts together. And right now, we have a government and a president that's trying to stable the ship, trying to redirect the country's trajectory in the right path. But so far, so good. it doesn't seem to be working, right? It does seem like things have gotten slightly worse. And I recall when we were in election season and everyone kept saying, nobody can be as bad as Buhari. And it can be worse. Nothing can be worse than Buhari. And I said, that's a false sense of reality that you're living in. Things can always get worse. Things can definitely always get worse. There's no flaw to how bad things can go. However, the hope is that we have an administration that is able to turn things around. And that should be the hope. Not beating our chest and saying things can get worse. As it is now, things are actually worse, right? Yeah, the dollar, the Naira currency has tumbled against the dollar because of the floating policy of the president. Inflation is at an all-time high because of the self-subsidy removal. These policies in themselves were not bad, but it's how they've been implemented They've been implemented in a very crass and thoughtless manner that has actually caused things to spiral. So right now, Nigerians are grappling with serious economic headwinds, right? Maybe things will turn around in the next, 6 to 12 months, right? Mm. But as it is right now, as we speak to you, things are worse. We have cases of kidnappings left, right, and center going on everywhere, all across the country. In Ondo State now, there's a news that 25 people were kidnapped from a church or something like that. Mm. Just some weeks ago, we heard that in a school in Zamfara State, bandits broke into a school and kidnapped over 24 students. And then the government is trying to negotiate with them for their release. I mean, it's more and more of the same that we've been dealing with in the last 8 years. So, the question now is, if a Tinubu, who a lot of people beat their chest and said, you know what, he's more cerebral than Buhari. You know, he built Lagos, he tamed the Atlantic Ocean. He has uncanny ability to solve complex problems. If that person has now sat on the seat of the most important position in the country as the president, and is also struggling to rein in challenges that this country is facing and put us in the right direction, what hope do you think we have that we will ever get things right?
Yeah, I mean, I think for Tinubu, Lagos, we can talk about Lagos, I mean, another discussion entirely. But when it comes to to Nigeria. Nigeria is a complex situation because you have a lot of moving pieces. You have a lot of administrative heads, that are supposed to come to the table as well, and perform.
Yeah.
Emefiele, for instance. I'm wondering why he's not in jail already. He part of the things that we are going through now, Emefiele. I mean, he's a major part of it, And I think they said he's making a plea bargain now.
For 50 billion. For 50 billion. That's really small.
Yeah, maybe like 70 billion.
That's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, he budgeted that one for his campaign, election, da-da-da. So for me, I think if we look at it, we also look at Nigerians too, being bad, elements. Contributing to where we find ourselves. And I think it's something that has to do with position of authority, power, and all. And then we start to mess up, when it comes to that. Yeah, especially when it comes to taking responsibility for our own space and all. Take for instance, I think Botswana had their independence maybe yesterday, 30th of September. I noted some of their developments, a lot of their developments, So let me just read it out, because I have it.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah. It said before independence, Botswana was the world's second poorest country. Today, it's an upper middle class economy. It says Gaborone was chosen, though it was cattle post, It said Botswana offers free, as at today, Botswana offers free healthcare, education up to tertiary, with students receiving a monthly allowance of $140. Best performing students go overseas on scholarship. Primary, junior, secondary students receive free food and after school meals for rural students. And all Botswana is a long continuous democracy, never had a coup or a civil war. It used traditional customary law and rule with modern democratic practices and established the House of Chiefs, which acts as custodians of cultural values, norms, and advises parliament and cabinets. So Botswana is among the most peaceful country in Africa, with low crime rates, Africa's best police. So Botswana had 14 kilometer tarred roads in Lobatse, made in 1947 for the Queen's visit. Guess what? He said, but today, Botswana boasts of 25,000 kilometers paved roads. Now, this is progress. This is what you call, celebrating your independence and all.
Yeah.
But what do we have outside of blame? keep pushing blame. Same thing Tinubu, I mean talked about today, putting blame on the past administration. Emefiele is the scapegoat now and all. So for me, I'm just looking at us and saying, okay, maybe we need to all, it feels like a broken record now, all come together and actually, you know, I mean, embrace progress and embrace, you know, growth, you know, and let all of us put ourselves, you know, in the same boat, you know, and going into the same direction, and no individual ambition, and no, you know, and but I'm just hoping that we can get our acts together. Especially one of the things that I think Tinubu can do, but I don't know because everybody's really on him. I know if his government can fight corruption, if his government can fight corruption, I think that would be, because that was what Buhari was supposed to do. But Buhari's government became the most corrupt that we've ever experienced. Yeah, the most corrupt that we've ever seen and all. Yeah, so for me, I'm looking at the government fighting corruption. Like China, if you still kill them, Emefiele, I don't know, really.
Yes, you have a problem. But you should. Emefiele was horrible. Emefiele, the kind of atrocity committed, it's beyond repatriation. Man. I mean, yeah.
Emefiele, if you are talking about doing dirty, Emefiele did us completely dirty.
For like 9 years straight.
Seriously. I mean,
I just wanted to point on you know, the example you gave of Botswana, you know, and I did a quick Google search. Yeah. When you were reeling out those accomplishments, seemed really, really nice. Botswana is a country of a population of 3 million people, right? So, I don't know if you can compare Botswana with Nigeria. I mean, Nigeria is like 100 times your size, right? However, that's not to say that they haven't, you know, been able to.
So I would say we can't compare. So I would say we should not compare China. China was, I mean, let's see China's independence, when they got their independence.
I think it took China a while to get that stuff together, though, to be honest.
Let's check when they got their independence, because I think I have it here. I mean, nations and their independence.
Yeah, but I think that overall, 60 years is enough time for us to be able to say, I mean, we're not going to be in our promised land by then, but we should have a clear path. We should be seeing the road like this, that this is a tunnel and the lights are at the end of the tunnel. We are seeing the lights. But right now, if I see they off the lights, in fact, the tunnel is like closer, we don't know where we they go. So that's the biggest challenge for us now as Nigerians. And you said something about the people, we as the people contributing to our situation. I think you're absolutely correct. Just some minutes ago, I saw Pastor Adeboye has asked for Nigerians to pray for the country again, that the will of God will prevail and Nigeria will prosper. You know, some people are saying, you know, Mr. Man, we've been praying for this country for almost, you know, 5 decades and things continue to get worse. Maybe prayer is not what we need. I think prayer is what we need. I think we need a divine intervention 100%. Because one thing has become very clear to me, these elections that happened showed me very clearly where the problem of Nigeria is. It's not really actually the leaders. I mean, the leaders are the problem, but there's a bigger problem. It's the people. I saw how easy it was for politicians to divide the people by throwing narratives that, you know, I thought we would have laughed off. I thought that the people would have been united in one voice and with one purpose. But when I saw how easy it was for our politicians to throw ethnic and tribalistic sentiments and use it to divide and conquer us, and I saw how we lapped it up. I saw how both educated, uneducated, enlightened, unenlightened, I saw how all of us became polarized across tribal sentiments and ethnic divides. It made it so clear that, you know what, we actually are in a very difficult situation.
Yeah, we're talking about China. Sorry, let me just China was September 21, 1949. That's 11 years apart from us.
They got their independence in 1949.
Yeah, 11 years apart from us. So what are we saying? And China is, I mean, the second, arguably maybe even the first when it comes to what's it called, economy, right?
Speed of development. Yes. And yeah, no, right, I mean, you're not gonna get any arguments from me.
Yeah. So yeah, no. Well, you know when you said Botswana was 3 million, so I was trying to look for the country that has numbers too
that we can use. But the thing is, even in that, China is even in like Asia, right? Asia as a continent have stepped up, right?
Yeah.
When you look at Asia, it's not just China, it's Korea, right? It's Japan, right? It's all of these countries that have, you know, woken up from their slumber.
Not that they are doing right, like when it comes to government too, but I mean, because they are communists.
I mean, look at the economic development wise, they've done much better for themselves compared to where they're coming from.
But you saw what they did during COVID.
Who is that?
China.
I don't really care about China. I'm talking more of Korea. I'm talking more of, you know.
South Korea, all those
Japan. I'm talking about Asian countries. Like Asia as a continent, they moved from being, you know, the joke of the world in the past, you know, to being countries that you take them
Japan
seriously.
Used to be the strongest when it comes to technology.
No, really, Japan
they still
up,
are.
Japan picked up on that, you know, just some decades ago as well, and really pushed that forward, right?
Yeah.
But in Africa, and I hear some people, they always throw Rwanda, that name every time I ask this question. I say, in Africa, can we pick one country in Africa that can say that, oh, since independence, post-independence, they've been able to come together, galvanize themselves, and achieve considerable incremental growth? Right, Rwanda, in my opinion, has a lot of good PR. Right, so the governor, the president is doing the solar, renewable energy, blah 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 blah. And the question I ask myself is, can you give me an average Rwandan and let me compare him with an average Nigerian? Is their standard of living significantly better? Is their lifestyle, the kind of life that they live, do they live a generally better lifestyle compared to an average Nigerian? I don't think so. The parity is not so wide. They are the same. So all of those PR and stuff that you're pushing about Kagame, I'm not really buying it, right? Yeah, maybe they have some few structural development here and there, but is Rwanda as a country so far advanced that we can look at them and say, let's tailor and template our own nation according, you know, in line with what they are doing, so that we can move forward? I don't think so. So there's a problem with the African continent as a whole, and it's probably the reason why the Western countries don't take us seriously, right? We are yet to just get our acts together, have high standards for ourselves, and hold ourselves to high level of accountability for the kind of resources that we have and the opportunities that we have to do so much better that we are currently failing at.
Yeah, I mean, another thing that we do is we like our big brothers, you know, the West. We love them so much, you know. I mean, somebody was arguing, put out an argument on X, and the person was like that. I mean, France, they are very, very happy. Very, very happy with what's it called, the government of Cameroon that has been there for 40 years.
Yeah.
You know? But when you hear that coup has happened, France will come up fighting for democracy, you know, and all. You get? And they use us as pawns, really.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, like you said, Africa, we need to come to terms with ourselves, and we need to start holding ourselves to real accountability. Like, where do we want to be? If Nigeria is very, very serious, we can say in the next 5 years, this is what we want to do. We can say in the next 5 years, when it comes to light, this is exactly where we want to be, and we will be there when everybody's hand is on deck and all, you know. But when it feels like somebody is trying to go this direction and the likes of Emefiele are, what's it called, behind you, you know, I mean, they are not looking in your direction, they are looking in their own direction, they are looking at their presidential ambition and all.
But you see, it's not even really an Emefiele thing, it's a Nigerian thing. And I'll tell you why I said that. And that's why I think our problem needs prayers and divine intervention more than anything else.
No. Our problem does not need divine intervention.
It does. It does. I'll tell you why. Let me tell you why I think it needs divine intervention.
No, because we've been praying.
No, so it's beyond prayer.
Don't forget that.
It's not even prayer anymore. Something has to happen.
So if you are talking about
prayer. No, it's not prayer. No, wait now. Something has to happen that is going to be beyond us. because it's clear that if you leave it to us, we are clearly unable to get it right. And I looked at the incident that happened in the Ministry of, I think it's the Ministry of Works, right, where the new minister, you know, Dave Umahi, you know, took on, resumed, and realized that our civil servants made it a habit coming to the office or coming to work at 11 a.m., coming very late. The minister will resume office. Some of his subordinates or workers are not in the office. Then the guy gave, you know, an instruction that, you know what, at 10 a.m. or at 9 a.m., close the gates. And then when they closed the gates, they saw battalions of civil servants locked outside the gates because they came late. And then those ones went on protest. And I saw a video clip of the labor union representative speaking. And he was demanding respect from the minister and saying that no matter what you think you are, you must respect us. How can you just lock us outside because we came late? You know, and the guy was literally threatening the minister and saying, you know, and the subtle message was, if you think that you have with it, when you come here, we'll show you. You know, you go run. Right? Because the minister is trying to tell them that you can't be an employee of the government and you think you can come to work whenever you like. That level of indiscipline will not be tolerated. But guess what? The civil servants were fighting back and telling him that you must respect the civil servants.
I thought they said they locked him out. They locked him inside too.
Locked him inside. I don't know about that. But what I saw were people who were not repentant.
But that's the typical Nigerian. That's the poster child.
I would see people be repentant and say, wow, okay, this is a new guy coming up and he's trying to set a new standard for how we should operate.
That's
caution ourselves.
Even Alex,
they were holding their right and saying, how dare you lock us outside because we came
even
late.
Even this guy, Alex Oti too is having it, what's it called?
Difficult. Right now.
What state is
Abia State?
Abia State is having it difficult because they're like, he's acting as if he's, I think he said his special assistant, that one resigned, that he's acting like a dictator and all and everything. And that's the thing, you know, when you want to do something right, when you want to do something, and then maybe you are somebody that is, what's it called, about work,
yeah, principled about your work,
and all that, people see it as maybe you are just being extra and all, you know. And I think that's where we need to call ourselves out too, as Nigerians, you know, especially the guys that works in the civil service, some of the most irresponsible set of people,
yeah,
that have lived fat on what's it called, shoddiness,
lazy work, doing nothing,
lazy work attitude,
nothing, yeah,
you know, and all,
offering and then, no value whatsoever to the government and to the country at large.
I mean, for instance, I used to roll with what's it called, a friend that is in the real estate and all. If you go to the what are these guys in the works and all these guys
Ministry
in the
of Lands.
Ministry of Lands and all that,
yeah,
some of the most useless, some of the most irresponsible set of people.
You'd be amazed.
You want to take your documents, you can
forget
take,
it.
Yes,
they now, don't even know
you can
where
take,
the file is.
And the way they will talk to you, the way they will be handling your document,
yeah,
you know, I mean, it's ridiculous. So, I mean, those stuff needs to change. You know, those acts.
So, how would they
change?
That's the question. Yeah. So, it's a matter of the chicken and the egg, right? You have one major problem, which is your leadership. Your leadership is bad, but your followership is also bad. So which one has to change first to lead to a change in the other?
I think
for us to change leadership, the people, the followers need to get it right.
Yeah.
But the followers clearly can't get it right because they are lost. So that means the leadership has to be the ones to change the followership.
No, but
so which one is going to come first?
But that's what they said. That's what they said. That the people get the leaders that they get the leaders
that they deserve.
Yeah. You know, and the thing with it is that we have to be doing the calling out across board, really. Like those guys that were fighting Alex Oti, that were fighting Umahi, for instance, and all. We need to call them out. You know, call them out like together, you know, so that they will see their nonsense and they'll see the nonsense that they are doing, you know, at their workplace and all. And I think from there, you know, I mean, we can make progress. We can get, you know, I mean, a little better, you know.
you sound like you didn't even believe what you're saying can happen.
Yeah, well, but no, seriously, but because by the time you look at it, you ask yourself, what exactly are you going to do, really? But we need to call ourselves out.
Yeah, we need to hold ourselves more accountable. We're going to go on a quick break. We don't go anywhere. When we come back, we're going to continue the Independence Day special. More gist to come when we come right back.
Hey, 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 it's your girl Green G, all the way from Germany. My latest single Hochenau featuring T God Da Flamspeeder is officially available on all streaming platforms. Keep streaming, streaming, streaming. Also keep listening to my guys LA and Reg at Funtaka Junction. Real talk. What's up?
If we're tough like cement, we're water don't spoil. Scratch like Joe with the crow boy.
And we are back. Thank you for sticking with us. If you haven't clicked on our sorry, let me just quickly give my announcement for
sorry,
you.
If you're
enjoying our episode today and you're new to the Funtaka Junction podcast, kindly click on the follow or subscribe button, depending on what platform you're listening to us from. It could be your Apple Podcast, your Google Podcast, or your Spotify, or Google Podcast, or Amazon Kindle. Wherever it is you're listening to us from, you click on the follow button so that you can get notifications every time we drop episodes, and we do drop them every week. Yeah. So, you can go ahead now, Resh.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it now. We talked about Nigeria so much, but I'm praying that we'll go back to prayer. And I'm praying that one day, someday, you know, we'll really, really be excited, you know, and talk about the good things, you know.
Yeah, I really think God, I mean, I really think a divine intervention has kicked in, because on our own, it's very clear that we cannot get it right. Yeah. That's clear already. As a people, we're just too polarized. We're just too different. We're just too weird to come together in one voice and make the right decision. So, yeah. So, I understand when they say pray for the country, because I think something divine has to happen, you know, for us to get to the right direction.
Indeed. And a lot has been happening, you know, I mean, because of our hiatus, you know, that we took. Yeah. A lot has happened.
I mean, the whole Mobad.
The Mobad crazy stuff. I mean, there is a lot about that Mobad that, I mean, I don't know, really. There are
at the point, I had to disconnect.
Accusations.
Because the story was
flying
becoming,
everywhere.
It was becoming unbecoming.
And then Pastor Tunde Bakare to lend his voice, you know, to the Mobad.
It made sense. Although it was kind of insensitive at the time, because nobody wanted to hear that shit.
But because I know of which I saw some of those guys' videos. And I saw some of those what's it called, scuffles, you know, that they had.
Yeah,
you know, and I saw the videos of those ones as well.
Yeah,
the guy was obviously rolling with the bad you know crew.
Yeah, you know the thing with Mobad's incident, and it's the same thing with all these guys like Zinoleski and Belashmore and all these guys, right? They're portable, right? They're hood guys, right? Guys who have been condemned to a life of thuggery and being adobo boys, area boys, right? Some of these guys, as they grow older, maybe they have different aspirations for their lives, right? But their economic situation and their circumstances has made things difficult for them to attain a certain kind of lifestyle. But they've got talent, right? And because they know they've got talent, they start to look at what's the best way for them to, you know, make this, find expression for this talent and make money, right? And you can see that maybe kudos to them, they don't want to delve into, you know, illicit means like, you know, being armed robbers or fraudsters or whatever it is. Now, what's your best outlet? What's the best outlet for an area boy that has talent in this country? Music, right? You find a record label, right, that's run by Egbon Adubos, like Naramali and all these other guys, and then they are telling you this is your chance at fame. You come in, what we know of Mubarak's situation is, he's coming, allegedly, right, as a musician. His hope is to do music. And then this local label is telling them there are some other things you need to do, right? You will be used to peddle some drugs, right? And the guy was, you know, in his mind, maybe that's the sacrifice he has to make, right, to be able to blow. He's doing the peddling thing on the side and the music thing on the side. It was when they brought the story of you have to become a member of a confraternity, swear suit of secrecy, you have to become one of us, you know, in which means join the cult, and there are some certain things you need to do to be a full member.
Everything that was when
the guy said, I know if you do that one.
Everything is alleged.
Allegedly, like I said.
Yeah, everything is still...
Allegedly, like you said.
I mean, accused until proven guilty.
Yeah.
Now, okay, yeah.
I'm just saying, so he's now want to come out of that situation.
Yeah.
Right? But you know what it is now? You can't die with the devil and say he want to leave. These guys are like, bro, he already known what is going on here. You can't just walk away. And that's where the problem came for him. You know, and you know, yeah.
I think I kind of side with what Pastor Tunde Bakare said, and it is that, I mean, this guy, he was rolling with the wrong crowd, you know, and his family too is kind of in disarray.
Yeah,
the mom is not at home, broken home.
Yeah,
the mom is not at home. The dad, he's an hustler. You can see him.
Yeah,
he's an hustler, you know. And he seemed to get a leeway, you know. And he has to now be the big brother of the house.
Yeah.
You know? So I mean, apparently, it feels like everybody goes to him for help.
Yeah.
You know, and the guy that should be having direction for his life and all, he's the one that is kind of, you know, filling in for everybody, you know.
Yeah.
And they come for money, they come for, you know, different stuff. I think they said he bought his mom, you know, property, or maybe rented property, you know, stuff like that, you know. And I think he was handling too much so soon. But you can't also say handling too much so soon because he was 27, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can't, but for me...
It's still a bit too soon, you know.
Well,
I mean... For a guy like that...
Well, I mean, for
he's been
us,
in the game for a couple of years. It's not just now he became a musician. So
I think to a large extent, his parents did him a big disservice, you know, because he wasn't brought up under, you know, a stable, you know, household, you know, that can guide, you know, they can give him directions and all and everything. And maybe if he had grown in a stable household, maybe would have probably been one studious student that has been shaped into
school.
Very
possible.
Yeah, that has been shaped into school. He's not popular. You know, he's just trying to make something out of his life, you know, and all. You know, sometimes too, challenges can bring your talent out, you know, because you have to survive. You have to do something about it, you know, and all. Maybe not necessarily close, but I liken it to back and Biggie, you know. I mean, way back when, you know. I mean, I think yesterday, was it 2 days ago? They found the person that killed Tupac. He's 60 years old now. Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
That confirmed though.
Confirmed.
Shooter?
Yeah. 60 years old.
I've heard that news. You know? Okay.
Yeah, 60 years old, and they found him eventually, and then he's going to go to jail.
Interesting.
After 60 years.
Wow.
You know? Yeah, so those are some of the things that happened, you know, with all these, I mean, musicians, you know, that grew up from the ghetto.
Yeah.
You know, trying to make things out of themselves, you know, but that life never leaves them, you know. They are always enmeshed with one gang trying to prove a point, you know, stuff like that and all. And that is what, you know, this guy got embroiled with, you know. And I saw one of the video, you know, where they were trying to get away, you know, where they were trying to get away from one of those fracas, you know,
Sam Larry.
And it was high like a kite.
The guy, right?
You see it on his face.
Yeah.
You see it, and then you're like, man, this guy is living on the fast lane, you know. And
eventually,
I mean, sadly too, you know, because he seemed to be a very talented guy.
Madly talented.
Very, very talented.
I never even knew who Mubad was.
Seriously.
I knew his songs. I didn't know he was
funny
the
enough,
one singing
I didn't
them.
Even know. I didn't even know most of it. Maybe one that I hear in passing, you know, but I've never heard of his name before.
He had a lot of good songs,
until he died, that all those stuff came up.
Had a lot of good songs, bro.
Yeah, and yeah. I mean, I just feel very voice. Bad for him. I feel extremely bad for him. I mean, man, you can only say so much, but I wished, you know, maybe the police would have, you know, responded to his
taking his petitions more seriously.
Yeah, the complaint that he lodged, you know, and all, you know, but it is what it is, you know. And maybe now that the thing is out, maybe there'll be some form of, you know, structure, you know.
No, but that's the thing, there's not gonna be any structure because it's not the first time things like this have happened. It's a level of gross irresponsibility in our government and our parastatals that we are talking about. Now, this is the police were saying, right? Mobad had issued a couple of petitions in the past to say, this is what's going on. It's a serious threat in my life. And what's the police going to say? Oh, we invited the guys that want to kill you to come and meet us in the office and you didn't show up. So that's why we left the case. Like, that doesn't even make any sense. You have written a petition that some people want to kill me. They're not telling me that me and those people should come to your office and sit down so we can discuss. Of course, I don't want to be anywhere near them, right? And again, just to show you how much of a circus this country is, another lady has lost her life, right? Just recently. Her name is Greatness Olorunfemi. Greatness Olorunfemi was unfortunate to be a victim of one chance in Abuja where she was stabbed and thrown out of a moving vehicle. Passersby saw her and took her to Maitama General Hospital in Abuja for emergency care. Maitama General Hospital closed their doors against her because they did not follow protocol. What is the protocol? They should present police reports for somebody that is about to
somebody
die.
That has a gunshot.
I'm
saying gunshot, stab wound, and then you're telling the person to go and provide police
Greatness Olorunfemi bled to death in front of General Hospital Maitama. I watched the video and I was so stunned to even have an emotional reaction. These guys literally closed the door, like they bolted the door on them, and then the people that brought the lady to the hospital were outside. And we're just doing video and saying, this is it though. This is where we are. We are in a general hospital. And they are saying because the lady she was still alive at that time. You could see her just taking gasping. Heavy breath and gasping to stay alive. And then they let her die. This is a federal hospital. So if we have hospitals that can turn people back and say because you don't have police report, we will not treat you. That already tells you that what the value for life that this government puts on the people is at a very, very low level.
But if we say government, you see, like I said, we're chasing the boogeyman, and the boogeyman will never catch the boogeyman. The government is the people. Now we still talk about, you know, we're talking about independence and we're talking about what has been bad and all and everything. Still goes back to the people. Until we realize that the government that we are looking for, we are the government that we are looking for, and take responsibility, whatever situation, whatever position we find ourselves, this is what is going to keep happening to us. This is what is going to keep happening to us, really. Where this guy had to die. Unfortunately, this lady too had to die. You know, because of police's negligence, the Nigerian police negligence. Now, this one is because of the health department's negligence. You know, this lady too died and all. And that's what is going to keep happening. You know, that is what's going to keep happening. So when we are talking about celebrating our independence, we will celebrate independence that the whole Nigerian embrace. The whole Nigeria embrace. That is the independence that we all are going to celebrate. Until we begin to hold ourselves account, that's what we're going to keep chasing the boogeyman. And then Pastor Adeboye will come again next year and will tell us, let's pray. You know, let's pray. And we can work for individual people that are trying to jackpot or da-da-da, you know, and just try to escape and try to make something out of their life and all. It always happens in that small, solitary, you know, place that you find yourself. But guess what? You might be the greatness that will take a bus trying to go fend for yourself,
will happen to you.
Yeah, that's what would happen. You know, so I mean, it's quite sad, really. It's quite sad.
But we have to be able to lend our voices to someone. And like you said, Rich, yeah, I agree with you 100%, right? Things like this is absolutely unacceptable. First of all, I know that hospital probably didn't take her because they knew they did not have the equipment,
the facility,
and the facilities to treat that situation. And they didn't want to be the ones to have to deal with the cops, right? Mm. Secondly, we've actually seen situations where some hospitals treat these cases, and then the same police, our government, will penalize them. That why did you treat this case? Why did you handle this case without following protocol? We've seen it several times, and it's because these hospitals have been at the receiving end of this kind of weird policy.
But this thing has been
that they've
forever.
Decided that them too will lock up, right? They are not going to make themselves scapegoats for anything. And then you can say, oh, the legislation, they've released a bill to say compulsorily, blah 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 blah, you must treat any gunshot wound as then wound first for asking their questions. But in this country, we also know there are so many laws that have been passed in these countries that are not followed, blatantly disregarded, and we have government that continues to look the other way. So until we have a government that decides to actually implement the laws and show strong body language, show strong political will to implement the laws that have been passed in this land, our parastatals, our people, will not follow those laws. So on this one, I'll place it at the feet of the government and say they have a responsibility. It's not enough to say, oh, there's a law. What actions are they going to take today now with this case that has happened with greatness? A very promising and bright life cut short, right? What is the government going to do in terms of repercussions to this hospital? I need to start hearing people have been fired, people have been sued in that hospital. I need examples to be made so that other general hospitals that think that they are doing the people a favor by treating, because what I understand, maybe I'm wrong, a general hospital is a public hospital funded by the government. You have no right whatsoever to close your doors on the Nigerian individual, or not even anybody that has a genuine need for medical care and attention. You have absolutely no right to close your doors on them. Even if you don't have what it takes to treat their case, you should receive them, administer the care that you can, and refer them to the right quarters. I expect that our government should make a definitive step and action on this case so that other hospitals can take note.
Yeah. I mean, you've said it all. I mean, enough said on that. I mean, there's really not much I can add, you know, to that.
Our thoughts and prayers goes to, sadly, the family of greatness, along with me, for this needless loss. I can't even believe that today we are still having one chance issues. We are still having people falling victim to one chance and all that. You would think that after all these years of these guys doing these things, our security apparatus would have found a way to clamp down on these actors. But because guess what? They apply the same route. These people are applying the same route every time.
You know, the truth of the matter is that
we don't have intelligence that will fish that one out. Or intelligence that will catch somebody that is causing trouble in Kenya or in Sudan. Our government can use that one to arrest them. They can use the intelligence to go and catch Nnamdi Kanu. They can use intelligence to go and catch Sunday Igboho. But to use intelligence to clamp down on bandits and one chance operators and kidnappers, that one is why they will be doing negotiation. And they'll be doing negotiation with... I mean, it's just ridiculous what we subject ourselves to in this country.
I think it's also more because the economic situation that people are going through has pushed a lot of people. I mean, not excusing bad behavior and bad acts, but that is just the nature of humans. You know, once there is lawlessness, once there is hardship, once there is poverty, once there is all those stuff, people will turn to violence, people will turn to crime, people will turn to all sort of, you know, and all. And that is what we are experiencing, you know, in this part of the world, you know, and all. You know, I mean, the economic hardship that Buhari's regime left behind, you know, is what has transferred into this government, and this government remove fuel subsidy, remove everything removable and all, and then started with the tax regime and all, you know. So people are trying to find their footing, and people are trying to, I mean, you had people are, what's it called, the public transport are saying like the fuel that they buy is more than the money that they make and all, you know. Mm-hmm. And these guys, they live tough life, you know, and all. So that's just, so when anybody looks to them like he's sane, I mean, maybe they dress well, maybe they kind of smell good a little and all, they see you as privileged, you know, and they see you as the people that is what's it called, know what they say now, you are not supposed to have this life, you know. If I don't have this life, why do you have this life and all? And they just kill that lady for nothing, you know. But it's quite sad, really. It's quite sad, you know, quite sad, you know. But I mean, it is what it is. I pray that those guys, I pray that they are caught, and I pray that they pay dearly, you know, for what they've done to this innocent lady. Really, quite sad.
Yeah, quite sad. Moving on.
I thought we were going to go talk a little about this guy, you know, that was installed, that was blessed, Jimmy Odukoya, that was blessed, you know, recently.
When you say blessed, I don't understand.
Yeah, it was that ordained.
It's been ordained the new pastor of Fountain of Life Church.
That's what ordination means. Are blessed,
okay,
with the title of a pastor, and yeah, then the sister too was, I mean, ordained.
So she
the
assistant pastor now? What?
Well, it looks like that to me.
Okay. Yeah, so they've just taken over their parents' position as the pastor of the church.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a bad thing?
I don't think. I mean, for me, what I would always say is, for every churchgoer, you know, yeah, if you have maybe expectations, if you have expectations about maybe your pastors or maybe your leaders and all and everything, you know, it's better you present it to them, you know, present the expectations to them, or ask questions. If there is any questions, or ask questions, you know, so that when maybe if they give you a good response, yeah, you probably decide, okay, maybe this is a place you want to be, you know. And yeah, if they don't give you good response, maybe this is not a place you want to be. You have another leadership direction, you know. I mean, leadership direction, you know, that you want to follow. You have it in mind, so you can go away from there. You go to other places and all, you know. Because I don't want anybody to look at that now and say, the pastors are now being so or what have you and all. What are the church members? Were church members informed that this was going to be the case? You know, if they were informed that that was going to be the case and they stayed in the church, then that's fine for them, really.
No, what so do you mean by really informed that was going to be the case? You think the pastor would have told the congregation that, you know what, guess what, when I die, my children are the one that will take over,
yeah,
as the pastor?
Yeah, but I've you know, I told you now, I've been a member of the Fountain of Life, you know.
Okay.
I mean, though the branch, I went to the branch. Though I went to the headquarters first before I was introduced to the branch, you know, because I was young then, and then we had to go to the branch, Yaba branch and all.
Okay.
You know, so I mean, I like Pastor Taiwo. I mean, he was a good man, you know, and all. But I mean, along the line, I think there was something of that nature that was kind of hinted that Pastor Taiwo was going to transfer the leadership to his kids and all. That I knew that from way back. You know, and all. Yeah, so I mean, for anybody that, if I could know and I wasn't really inside the headquarters, I wasn't really there, if I could know, then that means the whole of the church workforce, you know, that have stayed there for a while, they would have known that, yeah, that was going to be the case, you know. So I don't think if they feel like that's the case, then I mean,
but what do you think could have happened? I mean, in Nigeria today, we don't have churches that are institutions yet. Or like maybe a Redeem. Yeah, maybe
was Redeem an institution at the time?
Yeah, I think today,
no, it was just the
today just, Redeem is probably an institution, because
today.
Now, yeah, there are not many churches like that. Today what we have is churches where the founders have put a lot of sweat into taking the churches into the position that they are in. and it looks like a family business, right? You have all that blood and sweat you've put in. How are you going to allow somebody else to reap from it when you're no longer there? That mentality is what is very...
No, but when you say blood and rife, sweat, you put blood
that's
and
what
sweat.
That's how these pastors look at this. I can tell you that for a fact. They look at how big the churches have come. They don't, and I may be wrong, but my view is they don't see it as, oh, God has raised this ministry to be an institution. They see it as, I've toiled many nights and many days to build this church or this ministry up. I think it's only right that my progenitors will, or my children rather, will continue from where I stop. And until churches start to become institutions whereby there's a strong sense that that church or that ministry is run by sound spiritual principles and beliefs, whereby one man cannot be attributed to ownership. We'll always have these kind of situations, right? And it comes down to the Nigerian and African culture again, where, you know, things are seen more like one man show, one man businesses, family businesses. And these churches, they like to pretend that they have some form of structure, where they have board of trustees or they have some committee or council, when in reality all those guys are just eggheads, right? They're just figureheads. The pastor still decides what he wants to do. Nobody can say anything about it.
Yeah.
So I think it's just churches like maybe Redeem today. I think if for any reason Pastor Adeboye steps down, it's probably going to be a real structure around succession. Yeah. It's not going to be
sure.
Leaky or something.
I'm sure he would have done that.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. They have strong governance, you know, plans for how their head.
And that's how the four squares. That's how
exactly the Anglican and Catholic
Methodists.
That's how they run like a proper institution.
I mean, the podcast is not a Christian podcast. I would have talked about the concept of what church is anyway, you know. So when we say church, what are we really looking at, you know, and all. But you said it all. And I think, I kind of agree with what you said, you know. I agree with what you said wholeheartedly. And for me, the only thing that I'm going to say is for people not to get disappointed, you know, they need to ask questions. And if the leader is not willing to give you questions or willing to answer your questions, you need to bounce, you know, you need to keep you moving, you know.
So let me ask you a question. Yeah. If you remember our Fountain of Life Church today, would you leave the church because, what is his name again now? Jimmy is the pastor.
Yeah, but if I have prior information that was going to be the case, then fine, I would stay. But if I didn't know that was going to be the case, and of which our expectations is different, because I've been in Fountain and I knew, I mean, quite a number of leaders.
But you do know that the church's council came together and said they had their deliberations and they all unanimously decided that Jimmy was going to take over as pastor.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then members can take comfort in the fact that it wasn't an imposed decision.
No, it was more like it was more like this is what the man
wants. And they agree with it, so that's fine.
Yeah.
And there's not anybody feeling like, I mean, it's spiritual issues are weird because it will not be very strange if somebody is beating their chest and saying, no, I should have been the one to take over.
Yeah, but of course.
Paints a weird picture,
course,
right?
So, of course. Yeah, but if we talk about the leadership, yeah, Jimmy is not a young boy. He's not young. I mean, when
he's not a kid.
He's not a kid. Yeah, he has three kids and has a wife. You know, Irene Emmanuel. I'm sure Irene Emmanuel is younger than Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah, so, and Irene Emmanuel is leading his own musical.
Yeah.
So I don't think, I mean, when it comes to age, I don't think that is the problem. You know, we're just talking about the circumstance that surrounds, you know, him having to take over when there are people that are timber and caliber, people that are, you know, that's where this lady, I mean, this woman actually, and that's where she attend Jumoke. I mean, not Jumoke. Blessing Awoshika, the chairman of former chairman of First Bank.
Okay,
that's
Ibukun Awoshika.
Yeah, Ibukun Awoshika.
Okay,
yeah, Ibukun Awoshika. That's where she attend. Quite a number of people to attend there. She ministers there too. you know, and all. Yeah, so, but I mean, if that's what they agreed, that's what they, yeah, that's fine. I mean, they can have.
Yeah, I mean, all the best to the Fountain of Life and the body of Christianity when it comes to all that. We've come to the end of the episode at this junction. We're gonna wrap it up, but we hope you enjoyed it though. If you have your comments on any of the topics that we've discussed, make sure you can leave a thought on Spotify, or you can call us out on Twitter. We'll be posting the episode on Twitter as well. From us at the junction, we're signing out. Thanks for spending the last 1 hour with us. We're gonna catch y'all next week. Till then, stay jiggy. I'm signing out.
Yeah,
peace.
Sebunana Kusasa.
Sebunana Kusasa.